Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Damage Report. I'm John Arola. It's Friday. We're so close to the weekend, aren't we, Brett?
Aren't we, Brett Ehrlich,
host of Happy Half Hour?
I am really happy to be here.
I'm happy
to have
you here.
We're very close to the weekend. We have an interesting episode of Happy Half Hour.
Later today?
Yep. We cut out some jokes you might have been offended by.
Okay, that's good.
And you might still be offended by some of the jokes in there.
Uh-huh.
What
do you talk about?
Our guest is a writer. Somehow it got to the Taliban, but it started with Fartgate and ended up at the Taliban.
Okay.
So that's good. Ellery Smith, who you should definitely follow on Twitter.
Funny comedian.
Emmy Award nominated writer from Robot Chicken on the show.
Okay, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
On this show, though, we're going to have at least a little bit of fun. We're going to be closing out the show with excerpts from Sacha Baron Cohen's recent speech, I should say, which was awesome. I wish we could just play the whole thing, but they'd probably have an issue with that. So we're going to show you some excerpts. We're going to talk about the role of social media with fake news, conspiracy theories, and threats to democracy. We've got an update on Griftgate, that is the right-wing plot to dominate the New York Times bestseller list. Some more data on how Don Jr. shot to number one suspiciously quickly. And let's see, we've got Edward Gallagher, the allegations of war crimes. Donald Trump, obviously a huge fan of him. You've probably seen that come up in the news. We're gonna update you on that entire thing. But we wanna start off with something truly crazy, and that is Donald Trump's appearance on Fox and Friends. Just to give you a little idea of how this went, listen to this.
I do want always corruption. I say that to anybody.
Like technically a slip of the tongue, I guess. Some would say a Freudian slip, perhaps. But that's Donald Trump.
You spoke truer than you purposed, sir.
Exactly. You're supposed to whisper that part. So Donald Trump, president of these United States, called up Fox and Friends and they tried to interview him. I can't say that they interviewed him because that implied that he ever stopped talking and they got a question in.
They did get questions in.
Occasionally.
Essentially, and it was the kind of question where they just repeat what he just said in astonishment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't, oh, what?
You want a great example of that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go to our first clip because we got a few that we're going to go to. But Donald Trump, he's not going to be deterred by like Fiona Hill's testimony yesterday about how the whole CrowdStrike Ukraine 2016 thing is a Russian promoted conspiracy theory to get the suspicion off of them for interfering with US elections. That was just yesterday that was debunked yet again. Donald Trump today spreading it on Fox and Friends.
From the DNC, Democratic National Committee.
Who has the server?
Now, the FBI went in and they told him, get out of here. You're not kidding. We're not giving it to you. They gave the server to CrowdStrike or whatever it's called, which is a company owned by a very wealthy Ukrainian. And I still wanted to see that server. You know, the FBI has never gotten that server. That's a big part of this whole thing. Why did they give it to a Ukrainian company?
Are you sure they did that? Are you sure they gave it to Ukraine?
Well, but the next words out of Trump are like, that's what I hear. That's the word.
That's the word.
That's the word.
There's a lot of words on the internet. You should not trust most of them.
Like
most of them are bad words.
This is so horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like that specifically is so horrible and a microcosm of what's been happening in media discourse under the Trump presidency. Like those are jesters. This was a 50-minute interview with Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
A 50-minute show, and never anywhere else has it been so apparent that Fox and Friends are the court jesters.
Mm-hmm.
Because jesters' job was to come before the king and put on a show just before the king, as he doesn't care if they live or die.
Mm-hmm.
As he toys with them to his heart's content, either laughing at them and rewarding them with praise, or not being satisfied with their performance, and then like literally tarring and feathering
mm-hmm.
them.
I like the metaphor, and I think that there's something to that. But like the jester's supposed to be able to talk every once in a while. Like this is the jester. Like, are you sure you want? Don't pick that up. No, don't throw that through. Mr. President, seriously, don't eat that. That's not
every
food.
Other day when he's not on the show is the jester's performance.
That's true, yes.
But this is that moment where the king
gives them feedback.
Gives them feedback.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's it. And it becomes so apparent in this moment as they just stare. And the producers need to do something else visually with that. I can't.
Of them like.
And I don't understand how people watching that at home don't see their beloved Fox and Friends faces just melting with
like,
sadness.
Are you sure about that? And like occasionally, I want Jared to make a mashup for the main show. But he'll be talking, start talking and don't stop talking. You're the president.
So today I've decided that my shoes were too tight. What happened was the tightness of the shoes.
That's what they do. He keeps talking. They try to get a question because he's rambling off. And they try to get in and they can't. And then they smile at the camera because they know this is pointless. We don't even need to be here. We should have just given him, you know, sent him a webcam. And he could broadcast an hour to the Fox audience. But anyway, to the content of what he said there. He said the FBI came into the DNC and tried to get the server. And they said, get out of here, FBI, which is a thing you can legally do somehow. And they didn't give the server. All of that is nonsense. And it's so many steps of nonsense that it makes you just feel like a crazy person. CrowdStrike is not a Ukrainian company. It's a company based in California. That's what it is. There wasn't a server. There were 140 servers. Some of them physical servers, some of them digital servers. Information existing in the cloud, which is a concept that you're not gonna get the president to understand. There was no one server to hand over. There were many servers which were imaged and all of the information was given to the FBI. The FBI, which by the way, along with 16 other intelligence services of the United States, all agree that Ukraine was not meddling in the 2016 election. It was Russia. But he is spreading this conspiracy theory, which can be, if you go back far enough, the origins are the Russian intelligence services themselves. He is continuing to spread an already many times debunked conspiracy theory in the midst of this impeachment inquiry. And that's his defense.
And he isn't even spreading it right, which only serves the purpose of conspiracy theories at large, mm-hmm. which is just this cloud of doubt.
And yeah, just say it. A bunch of stuff.
And that is his only goal. And I don't want to get in the way of all the videos you provided.
Yeah, so. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's move on. The thing that we love to point to is anytime somebody looks bad for Trump, he doesn't know them anymore and they only got him coffee once or whatever. So Volker and Sondland both testifying today, or this week I should say. Here is Trump on both of them.
First of all, Volker, I don't know him. Don't know him. This guy, Sondland, hardly know him. I've had a couple of conversations with him. I see him hanging around, you know, when I go to Europe. But he was really the European Union ambassador, and all of a sudden he's working on this, and you know, ask about that.
Like Brian Kilmeade's got his hands like between his legs, like what are you talking about? And Ducey keeps like glancing to the side, like we're listening to a crazy person. Yes, you know both of them. Of course you know both of them. You had so many conversations with Gordon Sondland. He gave you $1 million, and it's not just that it's a bad defense to say that you don't know these people working for you. It's that if that were true, which it's not, it would make you look incompetent. And he doesn't seem to get that you're apparently surrounding yourself with all these people that you've given a great deal of power and authority to, and you don't know who any of them are.
So at no point have most voters really cared about the ins and outs of the diplomatic apparatus, right? Mm-hmm. And at the very least, we've had this base level of confidence that the people who are in charge of the diplomatic apparatus know anything about it. Mm-hmm. And the truth here is he knows nothing about it.
No.
And yes, at times our faith that they have honor and dignity and acumen is misplaced, misguided, and it gets us into trouble. We have gotten into wars for no good reason. Mm-hmm. But in this situation, you don't even have someone who cares about appearing like they give a crap about how international relations works at all. All he's looking to make points with is to echo the kind of like idle speculation people have around water coolers at work mm-hmm. when they've already talked about sports for the day.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and so Gordon Sondland, the guy he doesn't know, when the whistleblower complaint comes out, he like in a rush calls him up and yells, I don't want anything, I don't want anything, I don't want quid pro quo, but you don't even know that guy. Why are you confiding with him? None of it makes sense.
The thing that he read from is like, yeah, if someone just found out that you might have committed robbery and that they call you and they're like, no, no robbery, no robbery, thank you, bye, bye, bye.
And then the New York Times prints, hey, this makes it hard to know exactly what was going on. Because they pretend that we don't know when these things happened. But anyway, let's move on to another part. How petty is Donald Trump? Well, according to him, look at what was one of the things that influenced him wanting to get rid of Marie Yovanovitch.
This ambassador that, you know, everybody says is so wonderful, she wouldn't hang my picture in the embassy, okay? She's in charge of the embassy. She wouldn't hang it. It took like a year and a half or 2 years for her to get the picture up. She said bad things about me. She wouldn't defend me. And I have the right to change an ambassador. And Rudy didn't say good things, but he wasn't crazy about it. You know, it wasn't like a major topic. But I have the right to change. This was an Obama person. Didn't want to hang my picture in the embassy. It's standard is you put the president of the United States picture in an embassy. This was not an angel, this woman, okay? And there are a lot of things that she did that I didn't like. And we will talk about that at some time.
Okay.
But I just want to let you know, this was not a baby that we're dealing with.
No, we are dealing with a baby on television right now. The picture, like
Brian
when people
say, like moving, like
when people say the president can get rid of any ambassador for any reason, they're not talking about whether you'll put their picture on a wall.
Yes,
no one's talking about. And also, she's an Obama person. Yeah, she was appointed to Ukraine by Obama, but before that, Bush put her in
Clinton,
charge of Armenia. Like, she was in charge of what? Armenia and another country. Like, she was an ambassador under Republican presidents for multiple
administrations. Yeah, she's not an angel. She's not a baby. She is a career diplomat. That's what she is. She's a grown up. You're a baby. And you're a baby. I'm sitting at a desk and I have to yell at the president that you're a baby because you're clearly a baby. What we need to do for those reaction shots, you said they need to mix it up. What we need to do is we need to do a triple box. We need to have the full shot, and then we need to have close-ups on Ducey's face and Kilmeade's face so that Trump fans can see how uncomfortable Trump makes his biggest cheerleaders in all of media. They're looking at him, and you can see on their face that "Hello, darkness, my old friend" music playing in the background. Like, they are shocked by how stupid this person is. Kilmeade keeps shifting in his seat because he's so uncomfortable. Steve Ducey, a guy not known for his intellect, smiles occasionally at how stupid the president is.
He went after Ducey during the thing. Do you have that?
No, I don't have that.
He went after Ducey basically when Ducey said that he needed to confirm stuff. He was like, I need confirmation on that, referring to something that the president said. And he says, essentially, you don't need verification.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I don't, on the whistleblower's name.
Yeah.
And Ducey's like, well, we don't have verification that is the whistleblower's name. And he goes after Ducey and says, I like that you said that, but you don't need verification.
Exactly.
This is the president of the United States. And usually they specialize in taking little sound bites from the president, little sound bites from other stuff, not the raw material, taking those turds and polishing the crap off of them, and then presenting them to their audience in a way that doesn't seem wildly embarrassing. Yeah. But in this situation, you see what happens when they can. Yeah. When the mic's open and the live feed is submarining your integrity, the question is, are the people watching it able to perceive the president as anything less than perfect? And I don't know.
We gotta go on for just another minute because there's a little bit more craziness here. Donald Trump brings up Adam Schiff. And I want you to watch this video, and then we can speculate about what exactly he's implying here.
Well, there's only one person I want more than Where's Hunter, and that is Adam Schiff. I want to put that guy with his way.
What's your first question for Adam Schiff?
I almost said something that might have been slightly controversial.
Yes.
I didn't just say, I'm learning. See that, Steve? I'm learning. But after all these years, I finally learned.
So they're awkwardly smiling. Best case scenario, he was joking about locking Adam Schiff up.
It's either anti-Semitism or homophobia. Like, that's where I'm gravitating
toward. Well, what's the homophobia?
His way, his way.
I didn't even see that. I mean, definitely the Shifty Schiff, that's just an anti-Semitic thing. That's all that is. We're supposed to pretend that it's just a clever nickname he came up with. No, it's just anti-Semitism.
But the goal of this is just to obfuscate, just to have enough of a word cloud of catchphrases from conspiracy theories people vaguely know. Just the ability to say CrowdStrike, it's like going squirrel.
Yeah.
But like Fiona Hill in her testimony, she summarized like what she's afraid the Russians want. And I know people hear the word Russia and they're like, Russiagate, you go, I'm going away now.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of whether it comes from Russia or anything else, but the idea that she says like they wanted to make sure whoever they had bet on or whoever they tried to tip the scales would also experience some discomfort, that they were beholden to them in some way, that they would create just the kind of chaos we have in our politics. So I just want to again emphasize that we need to be very careful as we discuss all of these issues, not to give them fodder that they can use against us in 2020. Yeah. And to create this doubt, and what you see is all of the people that doubt, the people without integrity, that doubt has emboldened to gravitate toward that ambiguity.
Yeah.
And that's why you see the Fox and Friends people who have no problem mortgaging their integrity. Mm. You see Jacket Off Jim Jordan mortgaging his integrity and coming before everyone on the stage and jacketing off all over the Constitution. Devin Nunes, who is currently...
What do you have on Devin Nunes?
Devin Nunes has sued a fictional cow on Twitter. For being mean to him. Also, he's suing his mom on Twitter. And he has the lack of integrity to start every statement with, "This is a huge waste of resources and a bastardization of the legal system." That's Devin Nunes. It's the people who have no integrity. Yes. And they will absolutely go before the American people, mm-hmm. hoping, praying that no one gives a crap.
Yeah.
And you just need to give a crap.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that last point at the very least.
Jacket off Jim Jordan.
Okay.
He takes his jacket off is the joke.
We'll see in a little bit.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Joining us now, congressional candidate for Illinois' 11th District, Rachel Ventura. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you for having me on.
Glad to have you here. So this is the first time we're talking, and as we like to with candidates who join us for the first time, we want to get to know them a little bit. You're going to be taking on the Democratic incumbent in this race, that's Bill Foster. He's been around since 2012. What is your background going into this race?
So first, I'm a mother. I'm a single mom, and I've worked as an actuary. I have a background in mathematics, and I've worked as a naturalist. I have a background in biology as well. And I currently serve on the Will County Board. I am a progressive Democrat, and I ran a tough race for the people with no strings attached in my last campaign and was not expecting to run for Congress this year. But I went to Bill Foster in February of this year with Our Revolution, and we asked him to support the Medicare for All bill. As a Democrat, we thought he would support it, so we were surprised when he turned it down, saying that ACA was the better option. And then in June, as a scientist, we thought he would be supporting the Green New Deal. Being a naturalist who fought to protect our longleaf pine forest, to me, this is a no-brainer. Gets us off of fossil fuels, but also is a $16 trillion job package that puts Americans back to work. When he turned that down and said that he didn't think it was practical legislation, and then turned around and started supporting the USE IT Act, which is a $50 million bailout for the fossil fuel industry using our taxpayer dollars, we knew that there was a problem. But then looking into his background, seeing some of the money he's taken from ExxonMobil, from $600,000 from insurance and Big Pharma, it's no wonder that he's not supporting the people on some of these important issues. And I jumped into the race.
I think that's pretty awesome. And look, hypothetically, that's the way that this should work. I mean, if a primary is going to come about, it should come about because citizens tried to get their representative to do the right thing and clearly weren't going to. Now, you mentioned there a little bit of research into how some of his big donors might be influencing his positions on those issues. So as you're launching your bid against him, what is your strategy in terms of campaign finance?
Yeah, so I am a supporter of Move to Amend. I think we need to have campaign finance reform and get money out of politics so that people can be elected by their representatives actually supporting the people. So I talked about my last race. I was outspent 3-1 and you know, we walked 10,000 doors with my team and knocked on a lot of doors and talked to a lot of people. And in the end, you know, people want to be listened to and heard. And we have a huge wealth gap in America right now. So whether it's fixing things in the county board or fixing things in Congress, a lot of it has to do with representing the people. So, you know, I didn't take any big money in my last campaign. We're running on no cap corporate dollars and no dark money now, but we do have a very strong ground game and we will win this, but we do need to raise money to do so. I believe that if we can raise the money, we'll definitely win because of the ground game of knocking on doors. We've collected 5,000 signatures. We'll be filing in Springfield on Monday with that. We've got a huge team of volunteers and it's people who are sick of the system and are ready to get rid of these politicians who are bought and paid for.
So you mentioned earlier your support for Medicare for All and the Green New Deal. Outside of those two, which our audience is pretty familiar with, what would some of your other legislative priorities be were you to make it into the House?
Yeah, we need to have criminal justice reform. I live in Joliet and we are a prison town. And so there are a lot of ex-felons who live here. And unfortunately, we have corporations like CenterPoint and these staffing agencies and now this new developer coming in, NorthPoint, that prey on people with low income, having the ability to not get a standard job because of their record previously. And we don't want to give people, you know, a life sentence. So we need to have a way to seal the records once time is served so that people can get housing, they can get good paying jobs and be able to go back into our society. We also have a large Hispanic population here, and I would like to see immigration reform and a pathway.
Looks like we're having some issues, unfortunately. Oh, well, the internet, you know, it's a temperamental beast. You learned quite a bit there about Rachel Ventura's platform and some of her background. We're going to try in the near future to reconnect with her. There were a few other topics we wanted to talk about with her. But if you're interested in her candidacy, you could, of course, look for her both on social media and on her website. And Rachel, on the off chance that she's hearing this, thank you for joining us. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, lots more news to get to. Middle of a fascinating situation involving a former Navy SEAL accused of multiple war crimes, where Donald Trump is going out of his way multiple times to protect this person from any sort of consequences whatsoever. And oddly, I've never seen this before, the Navy persisting in trying to have some sort of consequences for what he's alleged to have done. So it's complicated. We're going to try to catch you up on all of this. Most recently, this is Chief Petty Officer Edward Gallagher. The Navy announced earlier this week that it's considering kicking him out formally out of the Navy SEALs, even though Donald Trump seems clear that he does not want that to happen. So Trump had tweeted, the Navy will not be taking away warfighter and Navy SEAL Eddie Gallagher's Trident pin. This case was handled very badly from the beginning. Get back to business. This follows Gallagher, he was ordered dropped in rank from chief to petty officer first class. But last week, Trump reversed the order, directing Gallagher's restoration as chief petty officer. So they tried to demote him, and Trump overrid that. Now they're going to try to kick him out of the Navy SEALs, and Trump is giving some indication that to the extent that he is able to, he will stop that from happening. In the current case now, Gallagher received a summons Wednesday for a peer review to decide whether to recommend his removal from the SEALs, along with three officers accused of covering for him. The announced review came 5 days after Trump initially reversed that demotion.
I don't know if this is a universal term, but monolithing, I believe it comes from 2001, A Space Odyssey, mm-hmm. where from space, magically a monolith appears and suddenly just decrees that primates will be the dominant species on the planet. Mm-hmm. That's how Trump works with soldiers. Mm-hmm. He just swoops in, and without any real care, it could be by chance, he just randomly selects a soldier he likes. Mm-hmm. And suddenly it's the end all be all. He must be this soldier's champion.
Yeah.
And that whim overrides all of, and I say this on your show a lot, like there are norms that exist that are stupid. Mm-hmm. There are norms that exist which are good and have reasons for existing. And those norms are the oversight that it seems that Gallagher would otherwise be subject to. Mm-hmm. But Trump just showed up from space and is like, this guy looks like a soldier. We should protect this soldier. Yeah. Meanwhile, Vindman comes in and gives his testimony. Oh, that's a bad soldier.
He's a foreigner.
Yeah.
When are we going to get an American to testify? So supposedly Pete Hegseth of Fox was advocating for Trump to take up this guy's case for some time. But anyway, look. We're going to give you a little bit of an overview of what Eddie Gallagher is alleged to have done, why this matters, and why it is so bizarre that Donald Trump is taking these extreme measures that he is. But even this, just to give you an idea, this is just going to be the beginning. You can do more research and find out more of the concerns that were expressed about him. But basically, Gallagher was accused of fatally stabbing a young wounded fighter for the Islamic State militant group, posing for a picture with the corpse, and shooting two civilians from a sniper's perch in Iraq in 2017. Gallagher was found guilty on the charge involving the photo with the corpse, but not the others. A Navy commander said that text messages sent by Gallagher prove his guilt. One message said, quote, I've got a cool story for you when I get back. I've got my knife skills on. Another text stated, quote, good story behind this. Got him with my hunting knife. That Navy commander then showed a photo of Gallagher holding up the dead prisoner's head by the hair. So multiple witnesses testify that this Islamic State militant was injured, was being treated. Gallagher walked up to him and killed him with a knife, and then appeared to multiple times brag about it through text messages, and was not convicted for those things. But it wasn't just that case. There were apparently for months brewing concern, the soldiers that were serving with him, that this guy, there was something wrong with him, and nobody was taking it seriously. So SEAL sniper Dalton Tolbert testified that he does not remember who started a group chat called the Sewing Circle, but the purpose of it was to connect with others who were disturbed by what they saw while deployed with Gallagher and decide how to handle it. And that sniper said, I shot more warning shots to save civilians from Eddie than I ever did at ISIS. I see an issue with that.
This is just, but with Trump, it's just proof that the facts don't matter. Winning matters. Mm-hmm. He's already decided that this guy didn't do something. Does he know what that something is? No. Does he care what that something is? No. Will any amount of evidence show up and convince him that actually Gallagher needs to suffer some kind of consequence? No. It mm-hmm. never has, and it never will with him.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter that just murdered someone with a knife. Mm-mm. That he a couple times he was on post as a sniper, and either out of boredom or hatred or God knows what, he killed a young girl, is alleged to, killed an old man. Apparently there were times when with either a machine gun or a rocket launcher, he would just fire it into areas that Iraqi civilians lived in. No, there was no reason, there was no threat coming from that area. He just started firing into an area that civilians lived in. And now, knowing all of that, and whether you think that these individual charges are true, I would simply say that the fact that an entire group of his soldiers are raising concerns about him, that concerns me. Trump would have at least been briefed on all this, asked earlier this year about his policy of potentially pardoning war criminals. Here's what he had to say.
Are you considering pardoning war criminals? And does that endanger our troops?
We're looking at a lot of different pardons for a lot of different people. Some of these soldiers are people that have fought hard, long. You know, we teach them how to be great fighters. And then when they fight, sometimes they get really treated very unfairly.
Yeah, very, very unfairly. He's had effectively no consequences whatsoever. He almost faced a demotion for apparently killing multiple civilians. So bear that in mind. There were two people that he pardons. So it's certainly conceivable that that's the exact person that he was talking about there. But notice, he doesn't advocate any sort of change in the training to stop someone from snapping and going on a spree where they start killing civilians. He doesn't care about that. And really, I don't think that it's random that he's picking this guy to champion. I think it's very intentional for two reasons. One of the core planks of fascism is devotion to the military and a belief that martial force and the use of martial force is a good. It is simply a good. It shall not be restricted. That's why Trump was advocating for killing more civilians through drone strikes and bombing and all of that. he has to show to his followers he's willing to kill people and he doesn't care about the consequences. But importantly, this guy didn't just kill people, he killed Muslims. And Trump does not want to send a signal to his base that you get in trouble if you kill Muslims. He wants to laud this guy as a hero for the fact that he killed not only militants, but also civilians who just made, who happened to make the mistake of being Muslim.
Yeah, I don't think it's a mistake, John. No, yeah. I agree. I mean, I see. Yes, it seems random, but my point with the monolith thing is essentially, I've said this also too, he's like a truffle pig. He just sniffs out, he like knows where the PR play is right now, and he's better than any other politician ever has been at that.
Yeah.
Which is terrible for literally the world.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, look, I say support the troops who raise concerns about someone who's apparently out of control. I say support them. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, lots more to get to. Last week, I revealed my research into how a number of right-wing writers have ended up as New York Times best-selling authors using bulk purchasing to make it seem as if there's a lot of individual unique interest in their books, boost them onto the bestseller list, and then they get to claim to be a best-selling author. Now, this was started because of Don Jr., who was very, like his father was talking about on Twitter, how good of an author he was. And you can go on the New York Times bestseller list and see that they mark it as having been the beneficiary of bulk purchases. So go watch that video. Hundreds of thousands of you already have. There's a lot of research in there. But I assumed that when you say that there was bulk purchases, that a lot of different groups did a lot of purchasing, and over a bunch of them, it adds up. But in this particular case with Don Jr., it was quite a bit simpler than that. We're finding this out thanks to Nick Confessor, reporter for the Times, who has this tweet. New FEC disclosures show a single large RNC payment of almost $95,000 to Books a Million in October, a few days before Triggered was released. An RNC spokesman confirmed that the expenditure was connected to their promotion of Don Trump Jr.'s book. Now, the RNC spokesperson was reached out to, had previously said, we haven't made a large bulk purchase, but are ordering copies to keep up with demand.
Right, we demand that we make bulk purchases.
Yeah, so Nick reaches out to them with the new information, says, and they say, we stand by our statement. Now, this is important because that figure, $95,000, I don't think is coincidental. So Books a Million, which held a fundraiser at the beginning of the month for Triggered, is listing copies of the book for $23.09 online, which comes out to a little over 4,000 copies given the RNC's payment. Now, what is interesting about that is, when I was doing my research on how people get on, what it takes to get on the New York Times bestseller list, you know, absent the bulk purchasing and everything, 5,000 copies is considered the threshold to get onto the list at all. 5,000 to 10,000 guarantees you a spot on the list. So this one bulk purchase almost did all the work necessary, not to get him to number one necessarily, but to get him on the list.
I'm starting to think that Donald Trump's children are the benefit of his being involved in politics. They're beneficiary, yeah.
Where's Don Jr.?
But it's like, John, this happens everywhere. This is the sad part about it. This happens with pretty much everything. And it's hilarious that it still happens with books. Like, books are like this thing that are supposed to legitimize you. Books are what get you on like CNN. Like, if you have a wildly popular web series, or sometimes if you have like a following on Twitter, that's not enough. But magically, if you have a book coming out, the person who, funnily enough, is booking major TV shows goes, okay, great, because I know how to do that. I know the email of the person who works at Simon & Schuster, and I know that they'll send me the right package so we can do that still of the book's cover and where to buy it.
Yeah.
And that's it, and that legitimizes.
And we are having an author on.
And not just, so that's with like books legitimizing people, but like on the right, there is so much money that gets invested into boosting the profile reach of all of these right-wing media outlets too. So if you see Prager University, like they spend so much money propping
up. Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Like 80,000, I forget, I saw something, don't hold me to it, but it's like the tens of thousands of dollars a month.
On Facebook advertising,
in
right?
In paid advertising. So you wonder, oh my gosh, is the right wing that far ahead in terms of, at the beginning, are they that far ahead in terms of an audience?
Mm-hmm.
No. they paid for it.
Yeah.
But when people look at the view count underneath, now they seem to say that, like, oh my God, that's legitimate. That has 150,000 views. So I can add to that. I can watch that. It is real. This goes all the way. I mean, I remember I had a job with Yahoo back in 2004 or six. And we had automatic placement on Yahoo's mail list, like if you had Yahoo Mail. So instantly our views had 1.8 million views. Did anyone ever opt into that? And back in 2006, that was like leaps and bounds ahead of literally everybody
it's
else.
Like pre-YouTube.
Did anyone voluntarily share or watch that? No. Maybe some did, but you could sell ads against that now because we have some kind of massive reach and distribution.
Yeah. And look, I think this is way worse than the advertising. I mean, people are going to advertise. I think it's on us to point out that these right-wing the personalities, people just pretend that it's this organic thing. No, it's billionaires who are buying ads. It's perfectly legal. It happens on TV. They buy ads for shows and stuff. I get that. But it's not an organic thing. And let's just bear in mind that the left doesn't have that. There's nobody buying hundreds of thousands of dollars of ads for us. That's never going to happen. This is even worse. This is just pretend. This is buying views.
Right.
Not promoting it so that people will then view it. This is just pretending that people viewed it. Like maybe some of those people did want the books. Maybe it sold some copies. But those 4,000, that's not the same thing as 4,000 people walking into Barnes & Noble or Half Price Books or Borders or Books A Million or whatever. It's just not true. And for other authors like Ben Shapiro, look, I haven't looked at his previous books. Maybe some of them people wanted. But his last book that came out, the only times it appeared on the New York Times bestseller list were weeks when it had had bulk purchasing. So we can't say with any guarantee that anyone genuinely wanted to read that book. And yet, he'll get on to Bill Maher. Maybe he'll get on to The Daily Show because they book people. Like I have billions of views across multiple channels that I've been on. That counts for absolutely nothing. I'm never getting on The Daily Show. Bill Maher doesn't care. But if you do a book, you could. And if you have in your Twitter bio that you're a New York Times bestselling author, even if it was just purchased for $50,000.
John, your video that you did on the first iteration of this was wildly successful. Who knows about this video because I'm in it and might submarine the whole thing. But you should write a book about the artificially inflated bulk purchasing book industry.
And then
on your launch, the Kickstarter should be for an automatic bulk purchasing push at the time, and then you just go blow the whole thing up. But just to put it all together, like, this is a waste of money from the RNC in certain ways, because the people that they're buying the books for aren't necessarily going to read them. There is no, you know, the reason it's the bestsellers is because it seems like people want it, they're seeking it. No, they're not. But it gets on a bestseller list and that legitimizes it.
Yep.
But the original investment does not go to the original intent of a book, which is for someone to read it.
And to hypothetically learn.
But the whole intent is to make it seem like the right has a lot of people who are way into it and are legitimate. And all of that just goes, as much as they say that like Jews run the world and run the media and buy everything up, what you see on the right is a proven, as we've seen, bulk buying smoke show that's meant to convince you that they have the winning correct ideas when they don't. But then it becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy in the end, and that's what's so dangerous about it.
I agree. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back a little bit more on, it's somewhat related. I'm not gonna try to draw the connection. But anyway, Sacha Baron Cohen, great speech recently. We're gonna give you some of the highlights after this. Sacha Baron Cohen just received an International Leadership Award at the Anti-Defamation League and gave an amazing speech where he highlighted the corrosive effect that social media has in amplifying lies, fake news, and conspiracy theories. I want to show you a couple little bits from the speech, which you should definitely watch in its entirety. Here he is on sort of laying out the threats.
Today, around the world, demagogues appeal to our worst instincts. Conspiracy theories, once confined to the fringe, are going mainstream. It's as if the age of reason, the era of evidential argument, is ending. And now knowledge is increasingly delegitimized and scientific consensus is dismissed. Democracy, which depends on shared truths, is in retreat, and autocracy, which depends on shared lies, is on the march. Hate crimes are surging, as are murderous attacks on religious and ethnic minorities. Now, what do all these dangerous trends have in common? I'm just a comedian and an actor, I'm not a scholar, but one thing is pretty clear to me. All this hate and violence is being facilitated by a handful of internet companies that amount to the greatest propaganda machine in history.
He specifically lays out the Silicon Six. Six really powerful people that influence what billions of people see. I know that he does political work, and you can't watch, you know, Who Is America without knowing that he obviously understands quite a bit about what's going on in our politics. But I was pretty shocked by that speech. It showed a great understanding of the threat, both inside of the US and internationally, that we're facing from social media and how it's been co-opted by some of the worst people operating.
Right. And he also speaks to like the algorithms that promote stuff, and it's stuff that is, whether you've thought about it or not, you may have felt it. Mm-hmm. And you may have played into it over time, and it might have played you over time, which is, he says it's easier to spread lies than it is to spread truths. It only surfaces stuff that gets engagements, and things that get engagements are things that you wildly disagree with or that are blatantly wrong, and what idiot could potentially ever agree with them? Mm-hmm. And those are the things that get surfaced. That in itself warps our discourse away from the things people would normally talk about, which are just like things that they mildly might agree on. Mm-hmm. Like most discourse was small talk, like, yeah, it is raining outside. Yeah, the sun came up this morning and it was cold. Like that kind of stuff that we all can touch base on. There is no touching base anymore. It's catering to base. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so terrifying, is that the people in charge of those feeds are essentially looking to make as much money as they can off it so that they play to the catering to the base aspect more than what they even say when you ask them and when they've made course corrections in the past, which is it's just about connecting with family, especially with Facebook.
Yeah, on that, on the engagement, he says at one point, they rely on generating engagement and nothing generates more engagement than lies, fears, and outrage. He says they care more about boosting their share price than protecting democracy, unaccountable to any government, and they are living above the law. So he gets in, we're gonna show you a little bit more of the video in just a second, but understand that if you watch the full speech, which you should, it's 24 minutes long, he talks specifically about Mark Zuckerberg, and he goes through multiple arguments that Mark Zuckerberg has made to evade accountability or reform for Facebook as a great example of the Silicon Six. And he dismantles every one of Mark Zuckerberg's arguments one after the other. It's just really fascinating. And I want to go on just a little bit more to the effect of social media in spreading propaganda. Here's what he had to say.
Facebook, YouTube, and Google, Twitter, and others, they reach billions of people. The algorithms these platforms depend on deliberately amplify the type of content that keeps users engaged. Stories that appeal to our baser instincts and that trigger outrage and fear. It's why YouTube recommended videos by the conspiracist Alex Jones billions of times. It's why fake news outperforms real news, because studies show that lies spread faster than truth. And it's no surprise that the greatest propaganda machine in history has spread the oldest conspiracy theory in history, the lie that Jews are somehow dangerous.
He goes very in depth into how anti-Semitism has been spread through all of this. And he talks about how Facebook and other places have had to deal with the fact that like Holocaust denial is spread on their platforms. And he says that sometimes the executives say, well, you know, it's just people who disagree about what happened. But Sacha Baron Cohen has a great line. He says, those who deny the Holocaust aim to encourage another one. It's never just about a difference of opinion. It's about laying the groundwork for real life action.
He also quotes Voltaire, who said, those who can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities, which is absolutely true. And that's something that this works to do over time. He says that stuff on Facebook is promoted as news, and Breitbart looks like the New York Times. And it's hard to tell the difference between them. But it is wildly frustrating. And he also basically says that this is the core tenet of progressivism, which is we need ground rules for this. Mm-hmm. We just need ground rules. The same way that the Industrial Revolution, we started needing safety standard. You know, we needed safety standards and work labor standards. We need standards for these people who are the publishers And purveyors of all this misinformation.
Yeah, we needed the jungle to get people to realize that, you know, these companies are not gonna regulate themselves and you're accidentally eating fingers. Well, maybe when you're on social media, you're accidentally eating bits of rats, maybe.
Thank you, John.
It's a complicated metaphor. I'm gonna work on it. But anyway,
Happy Thanksgiving.
Take a look at the entire speech. It's really good. Thank you, Brett, for joining me, as always. We'll see you tomorrow, Monday morning.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.